Thank you, Eric. It is Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff will be here. He's running a little late this morning. He can tell you why he's late. I don't know how much he wants to go into. Actually, he moonlights as an attorney, and I believe he was in court. He had a court date this morning. Mary Vandeveld is here. I wanted to talk about a few things that we were doing in the 70s. Mary, how old were you in the 70s?
In the 70s?
You're a teenager, right?
Teens, yeah, teens.
These are some, and listeners, you can jump in too until Bill comes. I could use your help. 312-981-7200. Some catchphrases that we said in the 70s, and I want you to be honest and tell me the last time you said these. When you walked up to someone and said, I can't even say it, I'll catch you on the flip side. Have you ever said that to anyone? Because I did.
No.
Not recently.
No, because I didn't turn records. You know, I mean, you know, like you. And that was like the flip.
I guess maybe, yeah.
That was kind of like the flip side you said. I always just said side two of the other side
but
of the record.
But this is like, you know, when you're seeing, instead of see you later,
yeah,
it's
see
like
later.
See you on the flip, catch you on the flip side.
Yeah, some people in traffic say that, on the flip for inbound and outbound.
Yeah.
They'll say on the flip. I don't use that
but
term.
But that's using it literally. This
yeah.
is not. What about do me a solid?
Ooh.
I gotta admit, I've said that within the last 2 months.
I've never said that ever.
I asked one of the boys, hey, do me a solid, would you take the dog out? Yeah.
I don't know if that's just the 70s. I don't know if you have seen the Winnebago Man.
What is it? No.
I suggest that you YouTube Winnebago Man, because there it is phenomenal, first of all. It'll get you through any rough day ever you ever have in your life. And there's several times where he will say, can you do me a solid?
So that's something that, like I said it within the last 2 months, but that kind of went away. Winnebago, is it an ad for the Winnebago, or is it just a dude who spends his time in a Winnebago?
No. It was a commercial is what it was. It was a commercial shoot, and this guy has just a complete meltdown on camera while they're doing this shoot, and the crew saved all of the rough cuts, edited them together, and then put it on YouTube. And it is absolutely amazing. I suggest everybody Google Winnebago Man.
Wait, does he swear? Because I can get it going right now.
He does swear, but I think there is one where they beep out all of the swear words. So you might just have to scroll through the different ones on YouTube.
All right, well, we're going to do this live on the air. So, Jasmine, get ready on the dump button, and I'm ready as well, because we can double dump if we need to. This is the Winnebago Man.
They've developed a multifunctional bathroom. Privacy, I don't even know what the f***.
Oh, boy, dump that.
I'm pretty sure there
boy,
is.
You get, like, 30 seconds into it, he's like F-bomb. Did you
yeah.
dump? Because so did I. Double dump.
Well, he is called the angriest man in the world, too.
So it did. Here's the deal. He, as Eric explained, a man named Jack Rebney is Winnebago Man. Outtakes and tirades pieced together by the video crew that Mr. Rebney hired to assist him in making a promotional video for marketing RV. So he did this on his own. He didn't go to an agency or anything. Several versions of the file on YouTube and lots of swearing. Let me just say that. But he says do me a solid as well as dropping F-bombs, I guess.
There is a lot of swearing, but I'm pretty sure there is one. I'll search for one that does not have the swear words in it. I'm pretty sure there is one on there.
Good luck with that.
No, I'm just looking at him. He
looks just angry all the time.
I'm not going to buy a Winnebago from this guy, though. I mean, he's talking about it. He's not the prime target for someone. I'm thinking of, you know, you get a Winnebago and you either are young and you bring some friends and do a road trip, or a family, but this guy is neither. Psych. When someone is presented and then quietly taken away, somebody goes, psych. Is that still popular?
Like psycho?
No, you know, like when you...
No, I don't think so.
You never used that?
God, where did I grow up? I guess I never... No, I was in the burbs. I was out in the suburbs.
When you say, hey, you know, I want to give you $1 million. Oh, really? Psych. That's how it's used.
Oh, like cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I never heard this expression ever in my life. I hope it's not dirty. Stop dipping in my Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
I say that all the time.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It's like, stop getting into my business.
Yeah, get out of my way.
Who dips in somebody's Kool-Aid? Lick-A-Maid, maybe, but who dipped in Kool-Aid?
I don't know where it came from. I guess in the 70s, but I'd say it still.
You still do? Yeah. Diana, are you jumping in, or what's going on?
Yeah. I was in high school, I used to say, you know, are you high? Like, to my friends and stuff. But now, later, I'll say it to my kids.
And what do they say back to you?
Most of the time, no, but, you know.
Diana, I got to be honest with you. All it says on the screen is, Diana, are you high? I thought you were going to ask me that, because I'm not.
I know you're not.
Are you high? Either. So instead of, are you kidding, are you high?
No, I'd say, are you high? I mean, you could say, are you high? Or back in my day, you'd say, are you stoned? Are you stoned? You know, because you'd be jealous, because you'd want to be stoned, too. But now it's like I look at my kids, especially my youngest one, and I'll look at him and I'm like, are you high?
Like, he's going to answer you.
Well, sometimes he'll say no, and I'm like, yes, you are. You know? But at any rate.
Also, did you catch a buzz? That's something you could do. Did you catch a buzz?
Did you catch a buzz?
All right, well, cool. Yeah. I'm sorry your kids are high, Diana.
No, don't worry about it. They're fine.
All right, awesome.
That whole Kool-Aid thing is kind of weird.
Have a great week.
That Kool-Aid thing, because that was the Jim Jones mass suicide thing was in like 1978, and that
this
was with the grape juice, you know, the grape punch, and I remember
it was
the Kool-Aid thing.
Yeah, the Jim
we all
Jones
talked
punch.
About it then, and so that's why I thought, did we say that? That was wrong if we were saying that.
I don't
you know
think
I mean?
It's based on that. That can't
I don't
be.
Know. I hope not.
That's terrible if it was based
on
that.
Yeah, and that was the 78, so I just read a People article about it, matter of fact, survivor story.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah, Jim Jones, that was just awful.
And he just had all these followers.
Yeah.
And what about David Koresh? He was one of those, too.
He was another one. He was later, yeah.
Yeah. Here's another one. These are 70s sayings that do we use today. I have a friend who still says this. It's embarrassing. Cool beans. Have you ever said that?
I like cool beans.
Oh, come on,
Mary. I do like cool beans, but I don't say it, but I like it when people say that. Cool
it's beans. An expression of approval.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to go out to lunch? Cool beans. 10-4, good buddy. Of course, C.W. McCall with Convoy Song made that. You know, my story about a CB radio, I wanted one so badly. This was the prequel to me getting involved in radio. I wanted a CB radio when I was a young girl, and my mom refused to get me one. And I said, oh, come on, I want to talk to the truckers. And that's exactly why she said she didn't want to get me one. But I wanted a cool handle. Never got my CB, so someday.
I say 10-4 all the time.
You don't say good buddy at the end of it, do you?
No, but I say 10-4. Like, okay, I don't know. I think it's just a traffic thing. I just say it.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Julie's on the line. Hi, Julie. What's up?
Hi, Julie. Or, I'm sorry, Wendy.
You're Julie. I'm Wendy.
Yes, I know. No, I used to ask my friends, have you been smoking grass? And nobody calls it grass anymore. I mentioned it to my 28-year-old son, asked him one time, and he just looked at me and said, are you kidding me? What is that?
They had no idea what grass was. Yeah, it's had many names, but grass, I guess, is not something that stuck.
No, it really didn't. But it gave me a good laugh.
I got to just say, our target demographic must be moms that have kids that smoke weed and you guys discuss it. Because that other caller said the same thing. Are you high? You're asking your kid, are you smoking grass? We're all so liberal. Thank you, Julie. Have a great day.
Okay, all right, you too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, grass is something that hasn't stuck around. Raymond, do you have some interesting news for us here on WGN? What's up?
Yeah, I'm actually a school teacher, and cool beans is making a comeback. I have like 5 or 6 kids a year that usually come up to me and say it, and then they get angry at me when I say it, so I just say fresco frijoles back to them.
And you're not even a Spanish teacher, are you?
Nope, I am a music teacher.
So really, cool beans, how old are these kids that are using it? High school or elementary?
I teach middle school, so I think it's mostly an eighth grader thing now. There's a couple of them that do it. And it's, I didn't know it was from the 70s, but apparently
it is. And Groovy kind of made a comeback a little bit. I have a teenage son who, but he's like, he should have been a hippie. But do you ever hear the kids saying Groovy?
Every once in a while. Mostly when they're talking about like stupid things.
Yeah. I want to bring that back. I like the Groovy term. Cool. Thank you, Raymond.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful day.
Cool beans. I shouldn't have just said cool. And Mike's on the line. Mike's called us 312-981-7200. Bill Left should be here any minute. It's Wendy here with Mike. What's going on?
Hey, hi, Wendy. I don't think you're high, so I'm on your side.
okay, good.
And coming from Westchester, not far from your neck of the woods, growing up in the 70s, guys with their T-shirt sleeves rolled up and their cigarettes tucked in there. This could always be said in more ways than one, meeting your girl, meeting the guys, and you would say, so what's the story?
Oh, yeah.
What's happening? You know, what's the story? And how many different turns that thing took. And I still say it today. People look at you like, yeah, he's rude, or, you know. I said, no, it's got so many different meanings. So
it's funny because it does sound rude, but you're not. It's almost like going, hey, what's the scoop? But that sounds better for some reason.
Yeah, and if we were going to go, if the guys were all sitting around a 57 Chevy waiting to do something, and if you were driving, you'd say, so what's the story? Like, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? But when you ask about what's the story, just trying to get a piece of...
Like, what's going on?
Yeah, right.
All right, Mike, be honest with me, because you were talking about, was it a 57 Chevy or a 67 Chevy?
57.
Okay, so tell me the truth here, and I won't judge at all, I promise. Here's another term from the 70s that is no longer useful, sit on it. Now, unless you were Fonzie, did you ever use that?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
Plenty of times, the old quarter strip little burnouts we used to do, and if you beat the other guy, you know, instead of saying something that's said today, you could give him a thumbs up or a down and tell him to sit on it, meaning that you won or your car was a little quicker today. But yeah, that was a good one.
All right, and you did not then go A and put your two thumbs up in the air, did you?
Yeah, a couple guys. Nah, Fonz was just a little cooler than me, I guess.
Fonz was really cool. All right, well, Mike, thanks for sharing. Thanks for caring. We appreciate it.
Good show. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Have a good one. Bill Leff is running a little late this morning. He should be here any minute. But first, we'll continue with, these are some slang terms from the 70s. Do we still say them? I have a couple doozies coming up. It's Bill Leff, who's back in action. It's Wendy Snyder here. We're talking about 70s terms. Are you all right?
I'm all right, Wendy, but somebody was dipping in my Kool-Aid.
Have you ever used that?
No, and I drink Kool-Aid every day.
The only thing I can think of is dipping in like a Lick-A-Maid, like if somebody licked a stick and put it in your Lick-A-Maid, but...
It just means stay out of my business, right?
Well, that's what Jasmine explained to me.
I think that's what it means.
But didn't you used to... Instead of Lick-A-Maid, use Kool-Aid, or was it Weiler's?
Weiler's drink mix. You fill up a Dixie cup with that and just ingest it and then do it again.
So would you say quit dipping in my Weiler's?
That's what we said at my house. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know what Jasmine says that kills me? Because Jasmine is, you're in your mid-20s, right, Jazz?
That is correct.
All right, so Jazz, on a daily basis, says, I kid you not, which is something that Jack Parr used to say in the 50s.
Yeah, that's old school.
You're a big Jack Parr fan, right, Jazz? You like the work of Jack Parr?
I guess.
Heavily influenced by Jack Parr.
She started a Facebook group called Partay.
Yeah, that's her baby. But she always says, I kid you not, and I always go, wow, Jack Parr's influence on Jasmine is so much stronger than I would have anticipated.
Your mom or dad must have said that.
Somebody over and over again.
Yeah, that's why.
Mary Vandeveld and I were talking about the Jim Jones Kool-Aid, and someone has texted and said, hang on.
Well, the phrase that brought out was, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Right. But somebody says, a little correction, Jim Jones followers drank Flavor-Aid, not Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid got a bad rap.
Oh.
Now, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, they drank this grape thing.
That we all assumed drink. Was like a generic sounding Kool-Aid, but it was really Flavor-Aid, yeah?
I gotta tell you, Kool-Aid is one of those words where if you're having some kind of powdered drink, you just call it Kool-Aid.
Yeah, like Kleenex.
Exactly.
Instead of tissues.
Like a Q-tip.
Yeah.
It's really a cotton swab.
Right. Right. Wow. You sounded very royal.
I kid you not. Again, these are 70s catchphrases that...
Don't you think if you're Kool-Aid and you hear about something like the Jim Jones tragedy and that gets to the story where they go and he made them all drink Kool-Aid, you go, oh, why? Of all the drinks on the planet, why did he choose our drink?
Yeah, I didn't care that much. Again, my father was a diabetic. We didn't have sugar in our house.
All we had was sugar.
I know.
We didn't have any
and
food.
And there are no
not...
diabetics in your household.
I know. I know. Everything we had was either dipped in sugar or was just sugar. Everything.
My dad was a childhood diabetic, and so my mom never had desserts or sugar. And I know it's a fallacy. Sugar doesn't really cause diabetes, but at that point, they didn't know that much about it.
We were the exact... When you rang our doorbell, it played, oh, sugar, sugar, instead of going ding-dong.
Here's a term, space cadet. That was totally popular.
Love that
I haven't
phrase.
Used it in forever. Have you?
I've never used it, but I'm impressed by somebody who does say it. And the one you said earlier, cool beans, the people who used to make cool beans now manufacture awesome sauce. That's like the updated version of cool beans. And the look you have on your face is the same look of disdain that I have.
All right, and I've heard people use this catchphrase, if you will, in the 70s, and probably even be earlier than that, but I never got it. What's the skinny?
I've heard that.
I don't really understand it. When you want the whole truth and nothing but the truth, I kid you not, you ask for the skinny because apparently the truth had a high metabolism in the 70s.
Yes.
I don't understand it. What's this? Give me the skinny.
I don't know where that comes from, but I did used to hear people say that.
Lay a gasser. I've never used that in my life.
Who would you say that to?
You would say, did you cut one?
I wouldn't say. Brother used, yes, we said that.
Who cut one?
No, the other one.
You said lay a gasser?
Well, I did.
That's because you do traffic and cars have gas.
I didn't. It was in my family. It's okay. It was my brother.
That brought a chuckle out of good old Mary Vanderbilt.
Here's something I don't know if anyone says at all anymore, but my dad's friend Ray used to say this all the time. Whenever you see Ray... He'd go, hey, Billy, what do you know?
Yeah, what do you know?
And I don't think he wanted to, I mean, I knew a lot of things, but I didn't think he wanted to hear everything.
That's like from the 50s,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Right. Yeah, that's a very 50s.
I know we're super late, but Eric Rung doesn't care, so we're doing one quick one, and then we got to go. Jim, you have a catchphrase that you still use?
Sure, farm out.
Farm out.
Farm out.
What is
pharma?
I got busted by the fuzz yesterday.
The fuzz, the police.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then keep on trucking.
With the big thumbs up and the foot out.
Yeah, with the foot out wearing elephant bells.
Yep. Did you say far out? Because who's the one person you think of when...
John Denver.
Yep, that's it.
Henry Dutchendorf Jr., Wendy.
Whose head is still
John
floating
Henry
in the ocean.
John Dutchendorf Jr., yes. Yep.
He was decapitated in an airplane crash.
Yep. More fun ahead.
Oh, that is bad.
More fun ahead with Bill and Wendy.
All right, Jim, thank you for calling. We have to take a quick break and then news coming up. Bill is back. We're back in action. It's now Bill and Wendy again, 720 WGN.
Thank you, Eric. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. A full show ahead, all kinds of guests. Something
full
for everybody.
Full show for me and
full
the listeners,
for
not for you. You were late.
I was late.
Twice this week or in the last week, I've beat you here.
Yeah, how about that?
Should play the lottery.
I had to be in court this morning, Wendy.
I did mention to Steve Cochran that you're a part-time attorney. You usually schedule cases.
Imagine somebody who is desperate enough to use me as their attorney in court. Just for a minute, think about how wrong things have gone in your life if you go, you know who I'll go with? I'll have Bill Leff represent me in court.
Well, here's what would be so funny.
That would be the worst.
Bill would walk in with a baseball cap and a lunchbox, not a briefcase.
Right.
Which lunchbox would it be?
I'd go with the Tom Corbett Space Cadet one. That's the one I would use. No, it was...
Even people who need a public defender wouldn't let you do it.
I know. I have to tell you something from yesterday, though. My wife and I saw the movie Hereditary.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Hereditary?
Hereditary. What did I see? I thought I may have seen the wrong movie. No, Hereditary. You're right.
You've been scared of this before you saw it. You've been dying to see
it. Oh, the reviews on this say, if you like your scary movies, and I do, I love scary movies, they go, this is the movie for you, Hereditary. You got to see it. And I won't give too much away. I'll just say that Toni Collette, in the beginning of the movie, Toni Collette's mother dies, and then things start to go wrong, right? But here's what I learned. I learned a valuable lesson.
Can I just ask who
yesterday.
Toni Collette is?
Oh, she's an Australian actress. You would probably know her best as the mother in The Sixth Sense, whose boy sees dead people.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she's been in a thousand things, but you'd know her in a minute.
All right.
Really good actress. Very convincing. And has quite a swing of emotions in this movie after her mom dies. Things go bad. All right, so here's what I learned yesterday, and this comes from years and years and years of watching scary movies.
You love them, right?
I love them. I love to be scared, and what's happened as I've gotten older is it's harder and harder to scare me in a movie because I've seen almost everything that could happen.
Even the pop-ups or pop-outs, I don't like those.
There's one good one in this movie. I won't say where.
You shouldn't even not have said expect, there was one.
There might not be one. I might have imagined
that. Dean lately, the Quiet Room or whatever, you guys ruined that. No, or Tully.
The Quiet Place.
I don't even remember.
Yeah. All right, so here's what I figured out yesterday. It finally dawned on me, a guy who's been watching scary movies from the time I was about a year and a half until yesterday. If you're in a scary movie, and by in I mean in the movie or even watching the movie, you know, about just like I was yesterday, just observing what goes on, and you live in a house that has not just an attic, but an attic with a pull-down ladder.
We do.
Something bad is going to happen.
Oh, God. So do I seal that up? What do I do?
I would get Lou Manfredini on it today. I would have him at the house sealing that thing up. Whatever's up there, you don't need it. Because if you're in a scary movie and you see that they have that, if they make a reference to the fact that they'll go, you know what we'll do when we're done with this? We'll put this in the attic. You go, oh, I hope it's not an attic that has a pull-down ladder. Because someone's going to get hurt.
Do you have one in your house?
We have an attic, but you have to bring a ladder up and then climb the ladder to get into it. So we're okay.
Although that, how much harder is that?
It takes all day. You got to plan.
How do you get anything up there?
You got to plan days in advance. If we're going to move something in or out of our attic, you got to go, hey, leave Saturday open because I got to put something up there.
I would put nothing up there.
It's useless for us.
Yeah.
But the plus is we don't have to worry about a loved one revisiting us.
You've just given away something,
maybe,
though,
or possibly, maybe not.
You gotta stop.
Every movie that has this, though, Wendy, and I've seen dozens of them.
Well, now when I see that attic in the movie, I'm gonna know something's gonna happen.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't ruin it because at the beginning, they say,
if you have a pull-down attic,
right, you may want to leave the theater now. An usher came and made an announcement. Is this on? Who has an attic with a pull down ladder? And four people raise their hands. They go, "Come with us!" And they just escorted them out. I never saw them again. I don't know what happened to them. But
what's happened to you? Where you're ruining things?
Not ruining it. I'm just saying I've noticed not just in this movie, but in every horror movie ever made from day one till day now. That's what happens with an attic with a pull down ladder. You're going to have a problem.
Well, it makes sense because if it's an attic that has stairs going up to it, it's not that eventful if a crazy spirit comes walking down the stairs.
Right.
If all of a sudden the trap door opens.
You're right. No, that's true. Because then you say, how did that evil being get up there? You know, because without that ladder, you go, well, that's mysterious. That's crazy mysterious. And why don't I see it? Why? So the crazy specter monster went up there and then just pulled the ladder up after themselves and then closed the hatch. That takes some thought. They're very thoughtful. And then
I'm going to spackle my ceiling.
You got to spackle your ceiling.
Because, oh my God, Bill.
All right, just be careful.
All right, it's a Tech Tuesday. That's what that Talking Heads music means. And CNET senior editor Bridget Carey is with us. Bridget, what's going on in the tech world?
Oh, everything's games this week because the big video game conference is going on now in Los Angeles, E3. And so I feel like I'm bombarded with all this news about all the new games that everyone's going to be going crazy over, not just this year, but like 3 years from now. So
and Trump pulled out of this E3, right, Bridget? Am I reading this right?
I have a, both my boys watched this E3 summit that I believe it took place, it was at 8:30 last night or Monday night. I think it was Monday night. And
it's a couple nights, yeah. I mean, every night is something different.
Like, they haven't left the house. They're just watching this E3 summit or whatever it is.
In the next hour, Nintendo's gonna like give a bunch of news too, or so. So you know, it's. I think that's really the end of it. You know, once Nintendo kind of speaks. But
who's allowed to go to this, Bridget? Just industry people, or can outsiders visit this as well?
Oh no! Fans go to this, so it's a mix. It's a mix of hardcore fans and industry journalists and whatnot. You know, covering it. This is not a year where we're going to see new game consoles. You know, that doesn't happen every year. You know, but Microsoft did say they're working on a new Xbox. But that's all they said. They didn't. That's all they said. We're working on a new one. And PlayStation said, you know, that might be a few more years before a new one comes out. Nintendo, they just had their Switch come out last year. So it's all about the titles. It's all about the games. And I think it was interesting coming away from this, because I'm not a big gamer anymore. Now that I'm a mom, there's no time for this stuff.
Right.
So I think the big takeaway for me is that you have Electronic Arts, a major game title maker. They showed off a new cloud gaming service. It's like Netflix for games. They say the future in a couple of years from now isn't going to be about getting that brand new console, that brand new Xbox or PlayStation or whatever, but rather you'll stream the game, and the game itself will have better graphics, but you don't maybe need to upgrade your system necessarily. It's just like how on Netflix, you know, whatever the movie is, you stream it. This would be whatever the game is, you know, you should be able to stream it. We've had problems with that in the past. This concept has been talked about before, but you need a good internet connection, and a couple, you know, companies have tried and failed because not everyone has a reliable connection. They say it's changing. They say internet's getting better in our homes, and we're going to be approaching that time where, you know, soon you'll just be able to stream what you want, and it doesn't matter what console you get.
More virtual reality games, Bridget, or is that leveled off a little bit?
Leveled off a little bit, actually. At least at E3, what you hear more about are, like, the cool new titles, and look at all these trailers for the new games and whatnot. I think later this afternoon everyone's going to be talking about Mario and the Super Mario Brothers Smash game. That's a really popular one. So I think more details are coming soon on that.
You really have made an impact with two teenage boys I have at home, because they always ask me to ask you questions about video games and such. So good to know.
Yeah.
I see stuff. There's this Wish app that, you know, if I'm on Facebook and they show something that I'm interested in buying, whether it be a really cool fluffy blanket or a cool pair of slippers, and I click on it, and I don't want to have to register and all that. But what's going on with Wish?
Everyone's talking about Wish. I actually heard about it a couple years ago from my sister-in-law. Like, she said, oh yeah, I bought this toothbrush holder for $1, and it took several weeks to get here from China, but it's only $1 on Wish. I'm like, what is this? Well, anyways, this new company out of Silicon Valley, this website, it's trying to rival Amazon and Walmart by being almost like a backwards Amazon. Everything is like direct from China for $1. This is cheap junk. This is junk, junk, junk. This is not branded stuff. We're talking about like ties for $1. Some things even say they're free. You just got to pay for the shipping. And then it takes weeks to get to you. That's the trade-off. There's no membership fee like Amazon has. They're really going after the crowd that doesn't mind getting like a $2 pair of sunglasses and waiting a month for it to arrive.
Are they good things, or is it really cheapy stuff?
Super cheapy stuff. Crazy. In fact, that's one of the things everyone talks about. It's just made like junk, not as advertised. Sometimes it doesn't even fit you. It's a lot of clothing, electronics. The startup just revealed, though, that it hit over $1 billion in revenue for the first time. It expects to double that this year.
And how many people were happy that spent that money?
Uh-huh.
A total of eight, Wendy.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. They say they have 75 million monthly active users. And it doesn't mean, but the biggest criticism is, okay, this was junk. I only spent $1 on it. Oh, well, let me throw it out. So now you got like more stuff in our garbage, you know, and just not great for the earth. But they're going, you know, they're trying to, you know, hit this market of people who don't mind trying to get really cheap things. In fact, if you, you know, notice if you watch basketball, the Lakers jerseys, the company spent like, I think, I don't know how much exactly, but they got the logo on the L.A. Lakers jerseys for Wish. You know?
Really?
So trying, Yeah, they're like trying to get out there. They might be based in Silicon Valley, but all the stuff is like direct from China. And I cannot obviously recommend getting electronics that are not verified, or who knows if they go through safety things. But, you know, Amazon now got a little panicked, and I think that they're trying to do something else too. You know, they've been kind of rolling out this new type of Prime for people with EBT cards, you know, the cards for food assistance and other government aid programs. They offer Prime at a much cheaper rate. So the price for a Prime, if you have one of those programs, is only $6 a month instead of the typical $100 a year fee, you know. So here you have Amazon going, ooh, there is a demand for this, you know, but don't go to Wish. Stay with us. And
what about AliExpress? Because that's something where you order knockoff things. They come on literally on a boat from China. It takes a while, but it's supposedly quality stuff.
I can't speak for... I never ordered anything from there.
I haven't either.
Yeah, I think it's the same deal. Because, I mean, Ali is like the Amazon for China. But I don't know how it compares to Wish. That I'm not sure about.
Got to be careful what you pay for. Although I'm going to start sending junk from my attic out to people. People can pay a dollar. I got a million pieces of junk. I'll be a millionaire.
You'll be so rich.
Bridget, thank you so much. You can follow her on Twitter at Bridget Carey, Carey, and find her at CNET.com. Bridget, thank you so much.
All right, talk to you guys later.
All right, we'll do some news. We'll get you some news. And then after the news, a man whose Airbnb story is so horrendous, you can't even imagine what he has gone through. We'll tell you that story next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Oh, yeah. I love the Molly Hatchet. Woo! I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
No, if you love Molly Hatchet, you need to tell the world that you love Molly Hatchet.
I love Molly Hatchet.
I love Molly Ringwald. That's what we have in common. We both love somebody named Molly. I have tried my best to keep this story a secret from you, because I want you to be...
Yeah, I don't know much about this.
I want you to be shocked by this on the air.
All right.
I want you to physically be nauseated on the air so everyone can enjoy this. All right. On the line with us right now is Brian Reynolds. Brian is a Chicagoan, lives in the suburbs of Chicago, and he joins us now to tell us a tale that will make you dizzy. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, Bill. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Thank you very much for being here. And I just want to say, before we get into exactly what happened, I'm so sorry that you had to endure this. This is impossible.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's an unfortunate incident. You know, it's just it's kind of bizarre all the way around.
Yep.
You know, kind of the reason why I was reaching out and kind of wanted to get across is this, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen to someone else on the line.
Wow, that's perfect.
That it's happened to others in the past, but it seems it might be an ongoing issue.
All right,
can I just ask, like, I've never used an Airbnb, and nice to meet you, by the way, Brian. So you have a place that you don't live in, or when you're out, you let people stay in it, they pay you money, it's cheaper than a hotel, and you make side money. Is that it in a nutshell?
Yeah, basically. So I started using it as a guest maybe about 5 years ago. First time I used it, I was out in Scottsdale, Arizona. And, you know, I quickly, you know, started using a lot more than hotels. You get a lot more for your money. You know, when you check into a hotel, you get a bedroom and a bathroom. And, you know, the upcharges for hotels. And you get a lot more room, a lot more amenities with the Airbnb.
But we should point out that when you go through Airbnb, you can get anything from an incredible, like a suite that looks like something a king would stay in, to somebody's couch. I mean, it spans all categories, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can rent a penthouse, you can rent a shed in someone's backyard. It's kind of ridiculous. I've even heard of people renting out properties and posting up camp tents.
Yeah,
and people even rented those. It's kind of crazy, you know. Kind of, you know.
I know. I'm setting up a tent in my backyard when I get home. But now, so how do you get the key? Here's my. And again, I'm sorry, and I don't mean to take away from your story. Right. But for people who have never used an Airbnb, how do you get the key? Like, you go to a hotel at any time, day or night, and you check in. They give you a key card. How do you, like, if somebody comes to your house, where do they get the key? Is it like a lockbox or something like that?
Yeah, oftentimes there's a lockbox, but me personally, I often like to go ahead and hand deliver the keys, give them a little walk around, you know, set them up with Wi-Fi network password, and, you know, answer any questions that they might have. You know, just a couple months ago, I had a couple from Switzerland coming in for their, after their wedding to come and stay.
A honeymoon? Is that the word you were searching for?
Some guys are afraid to use the word honeymoon, Wendy. Come on.
So it's, you know, people that come from all over. And like, so like I said, you know, if I'm able to help accommodate them a little bit more, or give them recommendations for restaurants and whatnot. So
that's really cool.
All right. So that's the history of Airbnb. And in your particular case, Brian, how many times had you rented out your condo prior to the incident?
I'd say, you know, maybe around 30 times over the course of a couple of years.
Mostly with good success, right? People came in, they stayed there, they paid you, everything went off without a hitch.
Yeah, so everything's paid through the Airbnb app. You know, I've had some people stay up 5 or 6 times, people that are in town, they're either setting up a company or business or something like that, and I've had a lot of repeat customers. So I've never had an issue, you know, anything similar to what had taken place just a couple of weeks ago.
Well, let's talk about that one then, because I find this one kind of interesting. What happened a couple of weeks ago?
So the guests had check-in, and like most hotels, it's about 3 p.m. check-in time. And about an hour and a half later, I was on my way out the door, and I get a phone call from one of my neighbors. You know, they're asking, you know, do you have your place rented out? I says, yeah, you know what, I got a couple that they're in town for a graduation. Just says, well, you need to go ahead and shoot over there and check it out, because there's some stuff going down. So I shoot over there. I was about a minute
and a half away. Brian, they weren't more specific. They just said, there's some stuff going down. That's it. Nothing beyond that.
No, they were a lot more specific.
Oh, they were.
You know, basically, there's a whole, you know, film production crew out there. They're like, I think they're shooting porn.
What?
I mean, obviously, I shoot. Yeah. So I shoot over there, and I couldn't even get into my parking lot. They had it was all roped off. You know, other residents, they couldn't even get in as well. And as soon as I got out, you know, they had a production company. Everything was set up outside in the hallway. There was food catering. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
What was the food?
God. You know, I walked right past it. I saw it there because that wasn't the first thing on my mind.
So about how many people, when you got to the condo, approximately how many people were there, quote-unquote, working?
There were between 30 and 40 people between the production crew and then cast members from the, quote-unquote, film or actors, actresses.
Wait, so they were filming a video, or this was a commercial or something?
No.
Well, so I wasn't sure what they were filming. And so as soon as I got out of my car, you know, people are still taking equipment out. They're setting up. And I said, you know, I told the guys.
When you say taking equipment out, how specific are you?
It's in what regards?
if they're making an adult film, what exactly do you mean when they
You just blew it. That's what they were doing?
They had... probably between $200,000 to $300,000 in filming equipment.
Wow!
I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like on a Hollywood set.
Wow!
So,
all right. So they're taking equipment out, and you still haven't gotten inside to see what's going on in your condo.
Correct.
All right.
So I'm telling them, you know, you guys need to get the, you know, and at the time, you know, I was heated, you know, so I'll keep it, you know, kind of PG for right here. And I told them, I says, you guys need to get the hell out of here, whatnot. And so I walked through the front door, and there's more people in the common area, and my front door was open about halfway. So I opened the door, and my whole place was filled. And, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I've never had that many people in my place. You know, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So I asked, I go, who is Sierra? And that is the guest that had went ahead and booked the place. So she had stood up, and she goes, I'm Sierra. And I said, are you crazy? I go, you booked this for a graduation? You're in town for a graduation? I go, are you crazy? I asked her to come outside, you know, talk, so we could go ahead and talk, because nobody else had, like, a clue what was going on.
Yeah.
So I was asking her, you know, I said, are you nuts? And so she's trying to get me to calm down and keeps telling me to calm down. And, I mean, how could you when that's going on? I said, you've got to be crazy. And at that point, you know, she started, you know, basically even like puffing her chest out, saying, who do you think you're talking to and whatnot? And I was done with that conversation. I started walking back to everyone and said, you know what, break your stuff down. You guys need to get the
right,
you know, out of my place. And a gentleman came up to me and said, you know, I hate to, you know, stop you right now. He goes, but I overheard that you said that they had booked it as a graduation. And, you know, I just confirmed it, says, you know, that's what it was booked for. He goes, you know, I certainly apologize. You know, it's very unprofessional on their behalf, but, you know, we went ahead and we filmed a bathroom and a bedroom scene. We just have one more scene to go ahead and film. Can we go ahead and finish it up? I says, no, man. I says, you got to get out of here. I go, you guys got to go. And, like, my neighbors are out, and I got to look out for them, too, and their safety. And
so these people are naked in there filming this as you walked in?
No. So when I came in, I mean, literally my whole living – so when you walk in my front door, you're right into the living room. It's open floor plan. So my whole living room is filled, the couch, ottoman, people standing – and my computer desk. My whole kitchen's filled. I could see people in the hallway, but I didn't even make it around the corner to see in the bedroom, bathroom, and how many other people were in there.
Did you kind of not want to look? I don't know that I would have wanted to have seen that.
I was just more or less just wanting everybody out.
Yeah.
Why didn't you call the police?
So, well, when I was talking to the guest, you know, her reaction,
Sierra,
she's getting heated, and she's, yes, Sierra, she says, she's like, I'm calling Airbnb. I go, call Airbnb. I go, I'll call the police. You know, so I go, this is my property. I says, I live here, you know?
Yeah.
And
they didn't have a permit for what they were doing.
They didn't have a well, so here's the thing. So I've been in contact with the production company, and they said that they're basically caught off guard, and I had tagged them the following day in a post on Facebook, and I had tagged the production company. And within like 30 seconds, I got a message from the owner. And he's really trying to distance himself from the whole situation, basically saying that, you know, all we do is provide is the lighting, the equipment, and whatnot. We're contracted out by Sierra, you know, the guest in her producing company.
Not her real name, I guess.
Wendy, you don't know that.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Well, actually, you know, so here's me. I mean, you know, I did my diligence, and I'm trying to find out about any information. I find her on Facebook and, you know, see what she's about. And, you know, basically, just like I said, just trying to get some background information. But so as soon as I was done talking to her outside, and, you know, she's saying that she's calling Airbnb, I said, I'll call the police. I walk away from her and just go back to telling everyone, to bust your stuff down, get out of my house,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, there was one guy there that was actually, you know, professional on his part and trying to handle the situation. But still at the same time, you know, after I went to them shoot the next scene, he's like, you know, trying to grease my palms, you know, if we're able to go ahead and compensate you a little bit. I said, no, man, you need to get out of here. You need to get out.
Are they Sorry.
So they agreed to start busting down their equipment. And then they asked me again, well, do you have another location that we could shoot at?
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean, I gotta give that guy credit. I mean, I'm in sales, you know, so I mean, if you're trying to get something done, you're going to, you know, travel down any avenue. So.
Yeah.
Are they at least going to put your name in the credits, Brian?
Special thanks to? Yeah. Yeah, they have to do that.
Little cameo in there.
So was there any damage or anything? And are your neighbors talking to you again? And have you gotten the carpeting cleaned?
I mean,
get a Bouchelle in there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's been kind of a rough, you know, period over, you know, the past, you know, week and a half or so. But, you know, I'm, you know, in constant communication with my neighbors, letting them know what's been going on with the investigation as well with Airbnb. And that's a big part of it as well. You know, I never thought that they were, you know, diligent in providing like a thorough investigation. And I kept on telling them that. You know, they never once reached out, called me, and let me know like what's been going on, where they're at. I kept on having to reach out to them. I wouldn't get a response. When I did, oftentimes it'd be from different representatives.
You know why they're not responding, Brian? I do, because the B&B stands for boobs and butts.
Yeah, for sure. You know?
See, but this makes me leery, and I know a lot of people that use Airbnb and love it and swear by it.
This probably doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, but they should still be behind it because this Sierra misrepresented what she was using it for.
Right.
Yes, and I've actually had about three other companies contact me prior to this, asking, you know, if we could shoot a video, if we could
really?
Shoot a movie. Yeah. So, yeah.
Why? What is there about your condo that makes it so conducive to adult films?
I have no idea what it is. You know, maybe it's got a good aura. I don't know.
But it does make you wonder how often. I mean, I'm sure this wasn't the first time somebody did this. Yeah. I would love to know how often this happens. I hope it's not very often.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I feel that, you know, Airbnb was just hoping that the whole situation was going to be swept underneath the rug. And, you know, as soon as I never felt that they were providing a thorough investigation, I did that contact the media to go ahead and so I'd get some exposure.
Sure.
If this happened to me, it's happened to other people too.
Yeah.
If they're basically saying that, you know, this guest hasn't violated any of their terms or conditions. I mean, even in the details and in my booking, it's a maximum of two people. So when there's 40 people in there, how is that not a violation?
You can't get in your parking lot. It's like it made it bad for the rest of the residents there.
It did. Yes, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I had to look out for their safety and concerns first and foremost.
Are you going to sue them? Can you sue them for this? I bet you could.
You know what? I mean, it's something that I haven't thought about. What would be an issue is if the residents you know, in my building, if they're kind of like, you know, reaching out and demanding, hey, you know what, I want you to cease like Airbnb operations,
yeah,
that would be an issue then as well. Because, you know, it's definitely a way to go ahead and provide some extra money. And like I said, I had it open. I was going out of town for Texas. But it's definitely a different avenue to go ahead and generate, you know, additional funds.
Of course, yeah.
I this just in, Airbnb has just changed their name to ERRBNB, Air. Like, make a mistake.
Oh, how about that? Well, Brian, like I said at the very beginning, I'm so sorry you had to go through this. I can't imagine a worse scenario. You want to trust the people who are coming in to rent your place. Will you continue to do this at all? Will you ever rent your condo again?
So I have some previous, you know, bookings. So sometimes people will book 3-4 months out. So those are things that I have to go ahead and, you know, adhere by. As far as my screening process,
yeah,
and check-ins, and it's going to be a lot more different than what it has been. You know, basically, you know, I want people to feel, you know, okay, here's your space, enjoy, you know, make sure that you have a good time,
right,
whatever it is. But I might have to go ahead and pop in and have a clause,
sure,
and say, you know, if I call you within an hour, I could go ahead and take a walk through the unit and see what's,
yeah,
going on. So
ask questions like, how long have you been using the unit? Have you ever worked with Ron Jeremy? Questions like that.
I'll tell you, this is never going to happen again to you. I'm sorry. Lightning doesn't strike twice. I can't imagine this happening. A listener has just texted in, though, Brian. 708 says, the title of this film could be Misadventures in the Condominium.
In the condominium.
You want to use that?
Maybe. Maybe. Oh, wow. Well, Brian, thanks for sharing your story. It's a horrible one, but maybe we can all learn from this, huh?
Yes, hopefully.
Well, keep us posted on how this turns out, because they didn't steal anything or break anything. It was just a nuisance, basically, correct?
Yeah, basically. And like I said, you know, so with Airbnb, they conclude their investigation stating that, you know, Sierra hadn't violated any of their terms and conditions. So yesterday, another, you know, news company had reached out to them, and then they said that she had violated their terms and conditions. So it's kind of, you know, flip-flopping back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Very
well,
much.
Well, good luck.
Well, I appreciate it.
Take
guys.
Care, Brian. Brian Reynolds, condo owner, and a man who has a hard time trusting people now, Wendy. And
I
understand
don't
why. I get it. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. You feel a little bad for Brian? I do.
I do. I know a lot of people use Airbnb,
oh, yeah,
and I don't want to slam them, although they should handle this because this seems like an error.
They're not doing the job they should be doing to fix this.
I bet they end up doing it.
I hope so.
But I just, you know, I'm a little weirded out about this because we might be going somewhere this summer, and I brought it up to Jim. I'm like, they have Airbnbs. We'd save a lot of money. But, like, I don't know. What if they have mice in their house and they haven't called an exterminator? What if they didn't wash their sheets?
Right.
What if their water isn't drinkable?
Right.
Do I worry too much? Maybe.
Mm,
but there's no,
yeah,
I feel like there's no repercussion. Like, if
right,
you're in a hotel and you're like, my toilet's not working, someone will come up and fix it right then and there.
Right, right.
You know, Brian was saying he was traveling, so he rented it out. They call and say, yeah, my toilet's broken. Well, I'm out of town for the weekend.
There's nothing you can do. Right.
Someone, the same person who thought that the title of the film should be Misadventures in the Condominium.
Yeah.
Also wanted to know, what did Brian say her name was? Sierra? Sierra Mist? Great forn name.
That is a good forn name. Sierra Mist.
Poor Brian.
She's bubbly.
Oh,
all right,
Bill.
We'll take a quick break, and then more show, but first the news.
Well, no, we're going to take a break, but I want to, Tom Mikaitis, professor from DePaul, is going to be on.
Yeah.
Big summit. It went well. First, isn't this the first time in forever someone has dealt with North Korea? It's been a long time.
I don't know about forever, but it's been...
I'm feeling hopeful.
Yeah.
I am the first person to want to give credit where credit is due, and we'll find out who the credit belongs to and what this means. Because I got to be honest with you, here are two guys shaking hands that I don't trust either of them.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Don't people go back on their word sometimes?
It's happened, yeah. All right, so we'll discuss that next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Eric. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Last night I was watching the news, and everybody was really excited about two leaders coming together, U.S. President Donald Trump, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, or Kim Jong-un, as Allison Rosati was calling him last night. And this is a big deal. These two countries have, I thought I heard, never gotten together before, but that's why we have an expert on to talk to us. Professor of History at DePaul University, Tom Mikitas, is on the line with us. Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Well, the world is still here, and we're all doing very well, and that's a good thing.
Now, is this the first time there's ever been a meet-and-greet between U.S. and North Korea?
Well, between their leaders, yes. The Korean War technically is not over. It was there was a ceasefire, which has remained in effect since it ended in the mid-1950s. But no, there's never been a sit-down of this kind. So it's historic in that sense.
Give us the good and the bad of what we saw last night. I know when you look at this, you go, well, that's got to be progress, right? You didn't expect to see these guys together shaking hands, and yet there they were. But it can't all be rainbows and lollipops.
Did one of them have one of those buzzers in his hand when they were shaking hands? Because I don't trust either of them.
Well, and I think that's one of the things. I actually think, I'm tempted to say it's always good when leaders are talking. There is, however, a dark cloud hanging over this, and that is the one who seems to have gotten the most is Kim Jong-un, because what he really has wanted and why he, in part, has pushed his nuclear program says, look, you've got to take me seriously. I am an important leader on the world stage. And, you know, he got that. He got that recognition. The president of the United States went halfway around the world, met him in Singapore, and they sat down with the North Korean flag, you know, lined up behind them with the American flag. That's a significant coup. There was also the promise on the part of the President Trump that he would end the really military maneuvers. Calling them war games is a really not a good choice of words. I don't quite honestly expect him to stick to that, because I think when he gets back, his generals are going to tell him that it was really not a great idea. On the other hand, President Trump will say, well, see, my hard-nosed diplomacy and bellicosity really got him to the bargaining table. So they will have a bit of that, but I think because he doesn't answer to a free and open media, I think Kim Jong-un is actually going to be able to do better spinning this as a win for him.
Do we know exactly what was in this agreement? What exactly do we know exactly?
Well, what they've issued is a memo with a lot of good intentions. But, I mean, if you could imagine that when it's your annual contract time, your boss, instead of giving you a formal contract, sends you a memo and says, you know, I'm committed to working to giving you more money, and it would be great if I can do it. I'll offer you more vacation. It would be nice if you had a better benefit package. Thanks. You might walk away saying, you know, well, you know, these are all really good intentions, but I really would like something more concrete. So it's unclear at this point. This might serve as a framework for more specific negotiations, or it might simply be a goodwill statement. Not inherently bad, but when two leaders meet, you create expectations. That's the bizarre thing about this. It's a reversal of normal diplomatic process. Typically, you get all these things worked out, and you have the big handshake, as you did between Arafat and Rabin with the Palestinian agreement in 1993 under Bill Clinton. And then you have the big, you know, the big band and the big show and the handshake. This is the reverse of that.
Tom, what do you make of this? We see President Trump being friendly with Kim Jong-un and with Vladimir Putin, but kind of on the outs with guys like Macron and Trudeau, who have been our closest allies. So what's that trade-off all about exactly?
Yeah, that's another concern. Yeah, not just that. Also, he's got a lot less press, but with a pretty brutal president of the Philippines, I think that's a real concern. I think that human rights advocates and others are saying, look, you know, you're really legitimizing fairly, you know, really authoritarian regimes and so on, and even celebrating the return of the young man from Venezuela. You know, Maduro was elected in an election that would most people consider to have been fraudulent. So, you know, not only are we not, you know, one could argue that, okay, we can't be the world's policeman and we shouldn't be getting involved in these things, but to actually step out and really praise and validate these people, I think is really problematic. And yeah, we are alienating our closest allies. And I think doing these things at the same time is not very propitious. And I think it's going to create real problems down the line.
You know, it's weird to me that they are yucking it up after, you know, Trump had called him Rocket Man and things like that. And then at lunchtime, there was this joke that happened where people were taking their picture and Donald Trump said, getting a good picture, everybody, so we look nice and handsome and thin. Perfect. And I mean, I guess there's a reaction from Kim Jong-un when the president said that via a translator. It's just, I don't know, this seems like a very serious thing. I want to give Donald Trump some credit. The first time a U.S. president, sitting U.S. president, ever met with a North Korean leader. But I just, I hope this works out to benefit us.
Well, that kind of gesture is very typical of what he does. If you remember the stunt with Macron where he picks the lint off his jacket.
Yeah.
You know, it's a kind of mild put down. It's a form of one-upmanship. And, you know, it's again, you know, a disturbing kind of thing. I mean, that's the bothersome thing to me is the refusal of the president to really prepare for this meeting, you know, and say, oh, I don't need to be brief. I can just read people really well. I go in and shoot from the hip. And that's what you're seeing. You know, it may work in certain situations. It's certainly not going to cause a huge problem, you know, for anybody, but it's indicative of really, I think, a decline in how diplomacy is being conducted.
I read something that Donald Trump, the quote was, here's a man who loves his country, loves his people, and yet he doesn't. He's tortured and killed a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, those two are not completely incompatible. I mean, you can make a case that all the dictators of the fascist era in Europe were strident nationalists, but they were also brutal. You know, so those two are not incompatible, but absolutely right. I mean, he's taken out family members. I mean, there's really, you know, he's a very brutal authoritarian regime, and I think that's an important thing to recognize. And I think, you know, when you criticize other previous presidents for not going there, you say, well, really, do you really want to lend credibility to that by essentially having this, you know, this glad handing and even this, you know, kind of praise and that goes on in these sorts of meetings? And I think, you know, other presidents have said, no, that unless we can achieve something substantial, that's not a useful way to go.
Tom Mikitis is our guest, professor of history over at DePaul University. If you have any questions or comments, you know how to reach us, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Tom Mikitis, professor of history at DePaul University. We're talking about the meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. We're at 312-981-7200.
And caller Mike has a question for you, Professor Mikitis, Dr. Mikitis. Mike, what do you want to say?
Hi, Wendy. Yeah, Tom, I just had a quick comment, and then I'll get off and let you respond. I heard from someone this morning on one of the news shows mention the fact that, frankly, this was no big deal in terms of this agreement that Kim signed is essentially the agreement that he came to with South Korea in April. So there's nothing new here. I'll get off and let you respond to that.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, Mike. Thanks for your comment. In that there is very little of substance in this, as I said. You know, and again, you know, I don't want to completely say this is of no value, because it is a commitment to work toward peace and to improve relations. There's ironically something concrete too, which is to try and find whatever remains there are of MIAs and POWs after all this time. But you know, it's a statement of good intention. If it leads to something else, if it really leads to concrete improvement in relations, denuclearization, demilitarization, I'll be the first to come on the show and give credit where credit is due.
I don't like Donald Trump. I'll come right out and say that. I don't like the man, but I would. Yeah. I am hoping against hope that this does something, and I'll give full credit as well.
Yeah, and I think we all will. And I mean, really, that, you know, I just think at this point, it's the most we can say. It is the best. It could be a framework for further negotiations. At worst, it was just nothing but you know, kind of a feel good kind of meeting. That really, if nothing more comes from it, then I think the beneficiary is Kim Jong-un. If on the other hand they actually hammer something more specific out, then Trump, you know, could end up really, you know, getting some credit for this. And it's also worth noting that, you know, any of these things, particularly denuclearization, is not something that's going to occur overnight. And it doesn't help that we've just reneged on the Iran deal. You know, that creates a cloud of uncertainty that, I think, Wendy, you said earlier in our discussion here, there's not a lot of trust that what is being said will be followed through.
Tom, last night on CNN, I was watching Chris Cuomo's show, and he had Dennis Rodman on.
First of all?
Yeah. Go on, because you're going to say what everyone in the world is thinking.
First of all, who thought Donald Trump would be our president? Even the Trump fans out there, I'm sure you're surprised. And who thought, you know, Dennis Rodman would come through as the peace treaty guy?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Dennis Rodman got very emotional last night, and he was crying, he was weeping, and he was talking about his role in all this as being the go-between. Is that true? Is Dennis Rodman the link that brings these countries together? Is that possible?
No.
I didn't think so.
Dennis Rodman, whatever else one says about him, he has always been a consummate entertainer. And I think, you know, he certainly had a high profile, you know, going there and so on. But no, he was by no means the broker. These meetings happen because two leaders have a vested interest in, even if it's a modest one, in getting together. If you want to look for the broker, look at Beijing. I find it very interesting that Kim Jong-un, and this is another historic thing, he's the first of his family of leaders who's really been willing to leave the country more than his predecessors have. When he went to Beijing, he came back, and there was something of a thaw. There was also the Olympics. They obviously want to participate. So I think, you know, those are the man behind the scenes, if you will. And I think if anything moves this forward, it's really going to be a desire on the part of the two Koreas to have better relations. Because I think that ultimately is where this has to be resolved.
I hope this is good for us. I got to be honest with you. It seems good. I know that Donald Trump had a little Q&A very early this morning, Chicago time, and he had mentioned, you know, we got to get the ball over the line, over the goal. So there's still work to be done. I hope this is a good thing for us.
Well, the thing, I mean, again, you know, focusing on the donut, not the hole. You know, there's certainly a backing off of this very unhelpful, you know, aggressive rhetoric, which is, you know, turning up the temperature. The missile tests have stopped. So, you know, I think that it's not likely to make anything worse. And as I said, it could be the starting point for, you know, improved relations. It just, you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty and so much work to be done behind the scenes that we simply don't know.
Tom, as a show of good faith, will you do what Wendy and I did and get your hair cut like Kim Jong-un?
Well, I'm getting my hair cut actually in a couple of hours, but no.
Okay, that's fair.
Nor will I get a cut like Donald Trump. So, I'm afraid, you know, I don't want to go my own direction that.
That's fine. That's fine.
Wendy, I can't imagine you're really going to do that.
No, I'm not.
Well, Tom, honestly, if somebody said to you 6 months ago that all this would play out the way it was going to play out, would you have imagined it could be true? I mean, it's a very strange turn of events, right?
It is a terribly strange turn of events, but I remember being at a party in November of 1989, which shows you how old I am, and saying if in January 1st of 1989 you had said the Cold War will be over, there will be a Communist Party in the United States, and in a few years there won't be one in Russia, they would have locked you up. So I don't know. I think our capacity to be surprised has been severely reduced. But no question that we live in very uncertain and turbulent times.
What next? Will the Cubs win a World Series? Now I'm being crazy. Tom, thanks so much.
Really, unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, it's who knows. Maybe the Bears will be back in the Super Bowl.
I don't know about that.
Wait, before Dr. Mikitis goes, Dennis Rodman on the phone. Dennis, what's going on? Dennis Rodman checking in.
All right.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate
it. You guys have a great day.
You too. That's Tom Mikitis, professor of history at DePaul University. We'll find out what Amy Guth has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.